A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I admit, my ears perked up because it's about my people. He wants to know what it would actually feel like to inhabit the body and life of a sloth for a day. Not the Instagram version, not the mindfulness retreat fantasy. The real, moment-by-moment experience of a creature whose entire existence is calibrated to an energy budget that would make a hummingbird pass out just watching. He wants to get inside the inner world of this creature. And he's right that almost nobody has bothered to study sloth cognition seriously. So we're going to try.
Not as a vacation from human pace, but as the only pace your body permits? That's a completely different proposition. What if the sloth is actually experiencing a richer, more vivid sensory world than we can imagine, just built on completely different priorities than ours?
Though I'll try not to let my natural bias toward leaf medicine and strategic napping color the analysis too much.
Your bias is exactly what makes this interesting. You're the only host in podcasting who can speak to this from the inside. But I've been reading the research, and there's a lot that even you might not consciously register about your own wiring. We're asking what it's like to be a sloth. To wake up in that body, to move through the canopy, to digest a single leaf over the course of days, to feel fear when a shadow passes overhead. All on sloth time, in sloth sensory reality.
Before you ask? No, I don't remember what it was like being a wild sloth. I was born in Mongolia. That's a whole different ecosystem.
You were not born in Mongolia.
The records are inconclusive.
A sloth's day isn't 24 hours of experience the way a human day is. It's a cycle of thermoregulation, digestion, and predator vigilance punctuated by rare, deliberate movement.
But the point stands. Even I can't tell you what the inner experience of a sloth is like from memory. This is a genuine scientific and philosophical puzzle. We prefer to call it strategic stillness. We have to triangulate from physiology, brain anatomy, and behavior, which is exactly what makes this more interesting than just reading off a list of facts.
Which is what I normally do.
Which is what you normally do, and we love you for it. But today we're doing something different. We're going to build a picture from the ground up. We'll start with the sensory world. What sloths actually see, hear, and smell. Then the metabolic engine. Because you can't understand sloth experience without understanding that moving slowly isn't a choice, it's a physical necessity. Then we get to the big question. What is a sloth thinking about all day? Is there an inner monologue? And finally, what this whole exercise reveals about our own assumptions. What we think intelligence and consciousness are supposed to look like.
I want to name something up front because it's going to come up a lot. There's a real risk here of what philosophers call anthropomorphism, projecting human experience onto an animal that may experience nothing like it. But there's an equal and opposite risk, which is what the philosopher Thomas Nagel called the view from nowhere problem. If we refuse to even try to imagine another creature's experience, we're basically saying human consciousness is the only kind that counts, and that's its own kind of arrogance.
Nagel wrote about bats, famously. What is it like to be a bat? His point was that even if we mapped every neuron in a bat's brain, we still wouldn't know what echolocation feels like from the inside. There's something irreducible about subjective experience.
And sloths might be an even stranger case. Bats are fast, active, social. None of those things. A sloth's consciousness might be so alien to us that we struggle to even recognize it as consciousness. Which is precisely why this thought experiment is worth doing.
Let's be honest about what we're actually attempting here. This is speculative phenomenology grounded in real biology. We're going to take what we know about sloth bodies, sloth brains, and sloth behavior, and then we're going to make careful, honest inferences about what the experience might be like. When we don't know something, we'll say so. When we're guessing, we'll flag it. But the goal is to actually try, to take sloth experience seriously, not as a metaphor for human relaxation, but as a real, valid way of being in the world.
I should say, This isn't just academic. If we can stretch our imaginations enough to take a sloth's experience seriously, we get better at recognizing that intelligence and consciousness come in forms we're not trained to see. That matters for how we think about animals, obviously, but it also matters for how we think about AI, about other minds in general, about what counts as a rich inner life.
Plus, I get to correct several decades of sloth slander, which I've been waiting to do for 300 episodes.
Has it really been building up that long?
Irvin, my entire species is a punchline. People see a sloth and think, haha, too slow, too lazy, too dumb to survive. Meanwhile, we've been on this planet for 64 million years with basically no design changes. We outlasted the saber-toothed cats. We outlasted the mammoths. We're still here, doing exactly what we've always done, while the fast, clever predators went extinct. So maybe the joke is on them.
That's actually a perfect entry point, because the first misconception we have to tackle is exactly that. Sloths aren't lazy. Slowness isn't a personality flaw or a lifestyle choice. It's an extreme energy conservation strategy. A sloth's metabolic rate is 40 to 45% of what you'd predict for a mammal of its size. To put that in perspective, if you were running at 40% of your expected metabolism, you'd be in a hospital bed with doctors running tests.
That's their baseline. That's normal. They're not sick. They're not depressed. They're not underperforming. That's the engine they're working with.
And that engine shapes everything. A sloth's body temperature fluctuates by 5 degrees Celsius, 9 degrees Fahrenheit, over the course of a single day. For a human, a 5-degree swing would mean the difference between normal and hypothermia, or normal and a dangerous fever. For a sloth, it's just Tuesday. They're functionally cold-blooded mammals. They generate heat when they absolutely have to, by shivering, but mostly they let the environment do the work.
Already, before we even get to the brain, we're talking about a body that feels fundamentally different from ours. Imagine your internal thermostat swinging 9 degrees every day. Imagine your baseline energy level being less than half of what your body size says it should be. The sloth isn't choosing to move slowly. Moving any faster would literally exceed its energy budget. It would starve.
This brings us to one of the most concrete, vivid examples of what sloth life is actually like. The once-a-week defecation descent.
The highlight of the sloth calendar.
Sloths live almost their entire lives in the canopy. But once a week, they climb all the way down to the forest floor to defecate. This journey takes about 30 minutes each way. It uses 8% of their daily energy budget. And here's the kicker. More than 50% of all sloth predation happens during this descent. It is, by far, the most dangerous thing a sloth does.
They do it anyway. They could just let go from the branches. Many arboreal animals do exactly that. But sloths insist on climbing down. Scientists still debate why. One theory is that it's about fertilizing the tree they live in, creating a kind of mutualistic relationship. Another is that it's about communication, leaving scent marks that other sloths can read. Whatever the reason, from the sloth's perspective, this is a high-stakes, deliberate action. Every movement on that descent is a cost-benefit calculation.
Which completely reframes the laziness narrative. The sloth isn't avoiding effort, it's rationing effort with extreme precision. When it moves because the calculation says this is worth the energy and the risk. That's not laziness. That's discipline.
I'm going to get that framed. Sloths not lazy, just more disciplined than you. Put it on a poster.
With a picture of you napping.
That's not napping. That's strategic energy conservation. There's a difference. We're getting off track.
So let's move to the sensory world, because this is where things get really strange and interesting. What does the world actually look like to a sloth? The short answer, blurry and washed out. Sloths have dichromatic vision. They're red-green colorblind, and their visual acuity is very low. They see the world as a kind of soft focus, muted wash. Details are hard to make out. Faces probably don't resolve clearly. The canopy isn't a sharp, crisp landscape. It's a blur of greens and browns.
Which immediately tells you something about what matters to a sloth. If vision were critical to their survival, evolution would have invested more in it. The fact that it hasn't suggests that vision isn't the primary way sloths navigate their world.
And that's where smell comes in. Sloths have an excellent sense of smell. The olfactory bulb in their brain is well developed. They navigate by scent trails. They recognize individual sloths by smell. They can probably identify which trees have the best leaves, which branches are safe, and which areas to avoid, all through olfactory information that we can barely imagine.
Think about what that means for the sloth's experience of the world. For us, vision is dominant. We walk into a room and we see it. Objects, people, colors, distances. Smell is secondary, almost vestigial. For a sloth, it might be the reverse. The canopy isn't primarily a visual landscape. It's an olfactory landscape. Every branch has a scent history. Every leaf carries chemical information about its nutritional content. Other sloths leave scent signatures that persist for days. The world smells rich and detailed in a way we simply can't access.
This is where the phenomenology gets trippy. Try to actually imagine it. Imagine navigating your home entirely by smell. You know where the kitchen is because of the faint scent of food that clings to that corner. You know your partner is in the room because their unique scent signature is strong. You can tell they were stressed earlier because their scent changed slightly. You know which chair is safe to sit in because it smells like you, and which one belongs to someone else.
Now add the fact that you're hanging upside down while doing all of this. Which brings us to another underappreciated aspect of sloth experience. The vestibular system, the sense of balance and spatial orientation. The hypothesis is that it communicates presence to other sloths. A kind of slow motion semaphore. I'm here. I'm about to go down. This is my spot.
That's almost the entirety of sloth social communication. You're largely solitary creatures. There's no pack, no herd, no troop. The mother-infant bond is the most cognitively demanding relationship you have. A baby sloth clings to the mother's chest for 6 to 9 months, learning which leaves are edible by watching what the mother eats.
You're already in a blurry green world that you navigate primarily by smell, hanging upside down in a position that feels normal to you but would make a human pass out, with an energy budget so tight that every movement is a calculated risk. Which means a sloth's inner world probably has no concept of loneliness as humans experience it. Social contact is rare and functional. Mating, mother-infant bonding, the occasional scent trail encounter with another adult.
Let's add one more layer before we go there. There's growing evidence across species that metabolic rate correlates with subjective time experience. Small animals with fast metabolisms, hummingbirds, shrews, seem to perceive time in finer slices. They process more visual information per second. To them, we probably look like we're moving in slow motion. A sloth, with a metabolic rate less than half of what's expected for its size, likely experiences time differently too, but in the opposite direction.
To a sloth, a human might look like a buzzing, frantic blur. And to a human, a sloth looks stationary. But from inside the sloth's experience, time might feel perfectly normal. It's just that the normal speed of events is calibrated differently.
This is speculative, but it's grounded in real comparative neuroscience. The critical flicker fusion frequency, the point at which a flickering light appears steady, varies dramatically across species. It correlates with metabolic rate and body size. A sloth's CFF is likely quite low, which means a sloth might perceive the world in something closer to longer chunks. Fewer updates per second. A smoother, more continuous flow rather than the rapid frame-by-frame processing we're used to.
Which would make the whole slowness thing even more of a misreading. From the outside, we see a sloth taking 30 seconds to move a single limb. From the inside, that might feel like a normal, deliberate reach. Not slow, just at the speed of sloth. The speed at which the world makes sense.
This connects to something I've been thinking about. We tend to assume that faster is better. Faster processing, faster reactions, faster decisions. But there's a case to be made that slowness enables a different kind of richness. If you're processing the world in longer, more continuous chunks, you might be more attuned to gradual changes, the way light shifts through the canopy over hours. The slow change in scent as another animal passes through your territory. Patterns that we miss because we're sampling the world too fast.
Like the difference between watching a time-lapse and watching real time. We see the time-lapse and think we're seeing more, but we're actually seeing less. We're missing the texture of duration itself.
That's beautifully put, and it gets at why this thought experiment matters. The sloth isn't just a slower human. It's not a deficient human. It's a completely different mode of being conscious. one that's exquisitely adapted to its niche, with its own strengths and its own kind of depth.
That's the foundation. A blurry green world navigated by scent, experienced upside down, on a radically different metabolic clock, where time flows in longer waves. Next, we need to get inside the skull and ask what's actually happening in there. What does the sloth think about? Is there anything we'd recognize as thought?
The question that naturally follows is, what kind of mind sits inside that body? If the sensory and metabolic foundation is that alien, the cognitive layer is going to be equally strange. So let's look at the hardware. Sloth brains are small, about 0.2% of body weight. For comparison, human brains are around 2%, and the cerebral cortex is smooth, lissencephalic, no folds. If you just looked at those numbers, you'd assume there's nothing going on upstairs.
Which is exactly what people have assumed. Small, smooth brain equals stupid. But that's like judging a book by counting its pages and ignoring what's actually written on them.
It really is. Because when you look at the internal structure, the story gets more interesting. The olfactory bulb is disproportionately large, which tracks with everything we said about smell being their primary sensory channel. But here's what surprised me. Sloths have a relatively large hippocampus compared to the rest of their cortex. The hippocampus is critical for spatial memory and navigation. It's the part of the brain that builds mental maps.
The investment isn't in problem solving or abstract reasoning. It's in remembering where things are, which trees have the best leaves, which branches are safe to sleep on, where another sloth's territory begins. The brain is optimized for the things that actually matter to a sloth.
And this is where we have to be honest about what we don't know. Nobody has done the kind of detailed behavioral studies on sloths that we have on corvids or primates. We don't have sloth puzzle box experiments. We don't know if they can plan several steps ahead. But we can make grounded inferences from what we do know. A sloth in the wild doesn't wander randomly through the canopy. It follows known routes. It returns to favored trees. Mothers teach their babies which leaves are safe to eat. There's actual teaching behavior, not just instinct. That implies some form of mental model, a map of the world that persists over time.
The social dimension is more complex than people think. Mother sloths carry their babies for 6 months or more. They have a specific vocalization they use to locate their young, a call the baby recognizes and responds to. Adults recognize each other by scent and probably remember individuals over time. This isn't a solitary robot executing a simple program. There's social memory, emotional bonding, probably something we'd recognize as affection.
The harpy eagle example is where this gets really vivid for me. When a harpy eagle's shadow passes over a sloth, the sloth freezes. And we're not talking about a few seconds of stillness. A sloth can remain completely motionless for 30 minutes or more, even with the predator circling overhead. From the outside, that looks like doing nothing. But think about what's actually happening internally. The sloth has recognized a threat. It's suppressing every impulse to move, including impulses that are probably screaming at it to flee. It's maintaining intense, focused vigilance for half an hour. That's not absence of thought. That's a sustained cognitive act.
It's the difference between a computer in sleep mode and a computer running a single high-priority process with everything else shut down to conserve power. The sloth isn't checked out. It's fully present, fully alert, just...
Which brings us to the consciousness question. Does a sloth have subjective experience? The neural architecture for basic consciousness is there. Thalamocortical loops exist, though they're simplified compared to ours. Sloths almost certainly have a unified sensory field. Emotions like fear and contentment, social attachments, and memory. They feel like something to be a sloth. The open question is whether they have anything we'd call self-awareness.
The mirror test is useless here. Nobody's ever tried it on a sloth, and even if they did, it's a terrible measure of self-awareness. Plenty of animals that clearly have rich inner lives fail the mirror test. It measures one very specific thing, visual self-recognition, and sloths don't even rely on vision as their primary sense.
A better measure is behavioral flexibility. Does the animal adjust its behavior based on new information? Does it learn? Does it make choices between options? And on all of those counts, sloths qualify. They choose different routes through the canopy based on conditions. They remember which trees have been depleted and which are worth revisiting. They assess risk. The calculation of when to freeze versus when to move is not a fixed reflex, it's context dependent.
Here's the counterpoint that I think needs to be made explicitly. The stereotype of the stupid sloth comes from measuring them against human cognitive priorities, problem-solving speed. But those are our priorities, not nature's. A sloth's cognitive niche is energy efficiency and predator avoidance. And by that metric, the metric that actually matters for their survival, they're extraordinary. 64 million years with minimal evolutionary change. They found a solution that works so well, it hasn't needed updating since the dinosaurs disappeared.
If you designed a mine from scratch to survive on extremely low energy input in a three-dimensional arboreal environment with predators that hunt by sight and movement, you'd build something a lot like a sloth brain. Excellent spatial memory, fine-tuned threat detection, social recognition through scent, the ability to remain perfectly still for extended periods while maintaining alertness. That's not a failed human brain. That's a brilliantly optimized sloth brain.
I think this is where the thought experiment pays off. Not just for understanding sloths, but for understanding intelligence itself. We keep making the mistake of imagining a single ladder, with humans at the top and everything else ranked below. But what the sloth suggests is that intelligence is more like a branching tree. Different lineages optimize for different things. The sloth optimize for patience, for stillness, for extracting maximum information from minimum movement. That's not lower on the ladder. It's on a different branch entirely.
What would a sloth think of us if it could? I suspect we'd look insane, racing around, burning energy constantly, making noise, drawing attention to ourselves. From a sloth's perspective, we'd be the ones failing the intelligence test. All that speed and complexity, and for what? We die younger than they do, relative to our potential lifespan. We exhaust ourselves. We attract predators, metaphorical and literal. A sloth might look at a human's frantic day and see something deeply maladaptive.
The ultimate sloth insult. You're trying too hard.
There's a serious point underneath the joke. When we call an animal dumb, we're usually saying it doesn't think the way we do. But that's not a scientific claim. It's a failure of imagination. The sloth's inner world might be richer than we can grasp precisely because it's so different. Not despite the slowness, but because of it.
Here's what I'd actually suggest to anyone listening. Next time you see a sloth video or meme, the smiling sloth, the slow motion punchline, pause for a second and actually ask, what is this animal experiencing right now? Not what does it look like it's experiencing. What is the inside of that moment? The blurry green light, the scent of the branch it's gripping, the slow drift of its body temperature, the quiet calculation of whether it's worth moving another inch.
That's what I'd call radical empathy. Not live like a sloth. That's the wellness cliche, and it misses the point entirely. It's think like a sloth. Use the sloth as a tool to question your own assumptions about what minds can be. What would it mean to take seriously a consciousness that doesn't prioritize speed, novelty, or problem-solving? A mind that finds richness in stillness, in duration, in the slow unfolding of a single day.
Because here's the thing. The sloth doesn't need us to understand it. It's been doing fine for 64 million years without our approval. But trying to understand it, really trying, not just projecting our own fantasies of relaxation onto it, tells us something about the limits of our own imagination. We're not just bad at imagining sloth minds. We're bad at imagining any mind that doesn't work like ours.
That's the humility this thought experiment demands. We spent this whole episode building a picture of sloth experience from physiology and behavior and brain anatomy, and we probably still got a lot wrong. The gap between our best inferences and what it actually feels like to be a sloth might be unbridgeable. But the attempt itself is valuable. It stretches something. Which brings us to the question I want to leave you with. If we ever actually develop the technology to inhabit another animal's consciousness, really inhabit it, not just simulate it, a sloth, a bat, a dog, what would happen? We haven't even gotten to hunger yet. A sloth's multi-chambered stomach takes up to 30 days to process a single meal of leaves. The sensation isn't hunger as humans know it, that sharp, demanding pang. It's a constant, low-grade fullness.
I suspect we'd be humbled in ways we can't anticipate. The gut microbiome does the actual work. Cecropia leaves contain toxins that would poison most mammals. Our stomachs host specialized bacteria that break those compounds down over weeks. You're not digesting your food. Your internal ecosystem is digesting it for you, at its own pace, and you get the leftovers.
Which means a human mind in this body would experience something profoundly disorienting. You'd never feel the satisfaction of a meal, never feel the relief of hunger ending, just this endless, patient extraction. No peaks, no valleys.
That's kind of the whole show, right there.
It really is. If this episode made you see sloths, or consciousness itself, a little differently, share it with someone who could use their assumptions challenged. We'll be back next week with another weird prompt.
Including the one humans are most curious about, the fear response.
In 1692, a Nepalese census recorded exactly 3 identical triplets born in the mountain village of Lomantang. The local monastery declared it a sign of divine favor, but the census taker, a Jesuit-trained mathematician, calculated the odds at roughly 1 in 64 million and spent the rest of his life convinced the data had been falsified. It had not.
Right.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.